You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Once again, we are the Lunch Pail Draftcast, back again like we never left. It's been almost a year since our last recording. A lot of things have happened since then. I got married. Jacob is now of legal age to consume alcohol. And we're here to give you our first episode of the draft season. The Senior Bowl wrapped up. We have a new Super Bowl champion, the Los Angeles Rams. I almost said St. Louis Rams. Jeez.
That's been 5 years, man. Come on.
But today, Jacob and I are joined by a guy I like in the blog world, one of my favorite writers in the Chicago area, Luis Medina, who also happens to share an alumni association with me. Please welcome the SIU Saluki, Luis Medina. Luis, how you feeling this morning?
I feel great. I am excited to talk about guys that I like in this draft and guys that I hope are in a Bears uniform. And hopefully we don't talk about too many guys who are good who end up in elsewhere in the NFC North. That's always my favorite thing. It's like, I love this guy. And then like the Vikings take him. Just like, oh, you son of a.
It's all Lou. It's always the Vikings. It's never anyone else. It's like, oh, I like this guy. All right. He's in Minnesota. Cool.
It's always because Rick Spielman would always trade down and he had so many picks to work with. I don't know what the new regime is going to be like, but man, I get so angry all the time. I'm like, man, I really liked, you know,
Minnesota's draft class.
Exactly. Like well, Christian Darrisaw was a round one guy. So I guess that doesn't really count. But if it's someone like a Patrick Jones or something, the edge rusher out of Pittsburgh, I'm like, dang, that's a good pick. You know, like in the third round, like I thought that was solid value, but we'll see. I'm hoping for good things this year.
Definitely. Positive. Well, Jacob, you've been talking, Jacob. Why don't you go ahead and say hello to everyone?
Hello. Hi. I'm Jacob Infante. What's up? just very, very informal right off the gate. But yeah, I'm over here, Windy City Gridiron's lead draft analyst. I put on my little fancy hat or whatever the hell, but yeah, no, I'm excited to be able to kick off Lunch Pail Draftcast again because last year we had a lot of fun with it. And
yeah, we did. And you know what? It's going to be a lot less stressful this time around because we kind of concocted this thing in late March and we put about, I think, 12 recordings out in a span of 4 weeks. It was a lot.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. We were cranking those out. So now this time we have a little more time. We can space things out a little bit and, you know, start to go a bit more in depth because, like, regardless of wherever you guys are at, like, for those of you listening in your draft process, whether you know the top guys or, you know, like all the day three small school guys, or you know, absolutely nobody, you know, this is just going to be able to, you know, ease you guys right into it and we'll be able to hopefully enlighten you guys and maybe entertain you a little bit. I don't know. I don't think I'm very entertaining, but I'm sure the other two here will be able to carry the load there.
I mean, I just know coming from me, like I'm sitting here, I got Jacob Infante, who was on Adam Rank's awesome podcast. You know, he's not big time in me. And then I got Luis. Man, I'm just a guy here saying hello to everyone.
Out here living the dream.
That's how it goes. All right, gents, let's go ahead and start it off. I guess I've watched a little bit of the practices on that I had recorded and whatnot through and you know, you read stuff here and there. I wasn't down in Mobile, but it sounds like Mobile really kind of belonged to the trench daddies, the big fat fatties up front, and whether it be offense or defense. Like from what I've watched on film, like the defensive line looked like to me like it was the bell of the ball down there in terms of just talent overall, like whether you were talking about interior or edge rushing. I just want to kind of get what your guys saw down there, or if like there was a specific guy that really caught your eye on you know, whether you were watching the film or whether you were down at practice. Like, Jake, I think you were down in Mobile, right? Or not Mobile, but were they in Mobile this year?
Yeah.
I keep saying Mobile. Yeah, Mobile. Like, God. Yeah.
No, they
things are being changed.
Yeah. Yeah, but I wasn't able to make it down this year, unfortunately. We did send Robert Schmitz and Jeff Burkus down there, which, you know, that was really cool to be able to hear their firsthand perspectives. I'm hoping next year I can pull it off, because, you know, it'll be I just wasn't able to pull it off in my schedule, unfortunately. But it's a lot of fun down there for sure. So what I was able to see in terms of practices in the game, I definitely agree. I think the defensive line is a very impressive group at the Senior Bowl this year. I think one guy especially who stood out to me was Perrion Winfrey, the D lineman out of Oklahoma. And I think he's the type of guy you're looking at as an ideal three tech in, you know, at the next level, just because of how quick he is. Like, he's a big guy. He's not a pushover by any means, but he's able to generate pressure along the interior. Like, very few guys in this class can. Just how like explosive he is and how quick twitched and everything. And he's got a solid ability to use his hands well to disengage at the point of attack. But there's a lot to like in that class. I think that Cameron Thomas was another guy that out of San Diego State. He's a bit of an edge rusher, defensive line tweener. But I think that he also had a good performance overall. I'm trying to think of a couple more off the top of my head. I'm sure there are a handful, because it's a good defensive line class, at least in my opinion. I don't know if there's like a bona fide day one first round type of guy, but you're also looking at like Logan Hall out of Houston is another one of those tweener guys that I really like. Travis Jones out of UConn's a big one tech run stuffer type of dude. There's a lot to like in this class. So D-line, I definitely agree with you. That was huge in this class. A lot of guys really stepped it up.
For sure. Yeah, this senior, Lou, how about you?
I was going to say, yeah, this Senior Bowl was really interesting in terms of how to watch it, especially from a Bears perspective. New GM, new head coach, new scheme. You're looking for new players. You're not, you know, we had grown accustomed to looking for certain types of players under Ryan Pace, because when you're 7 years with a, you know, following a GM, he has his guys, he has his trends. I found myself gravitating to the offensive side of the ball on the offensive line. The guy who stood out to me in watching and in reading stuff from people who were down there was Zion Johnson, the kid from Boston College, center, guard, really holds his own. The type of player like you want to kind of build your interior of the offensive line around. And he's a guy I think who could be a second round pick. He has the kind of vibes where if he tests really well at the combine and we get some more like fluff pieces on him, like he's a guy who ends up at that back end of the first round. But those are the kinds of players that I love watching for at the Senior Bowl. Guys who, you know, multiple year starters, have potential positional versatility, and kind of play with a little bit of an edge. You saw that a lot in the trenches, offensive side, defensive side. There's another guy, and his name slips my mind, so I have to check my notes. Like Trevor Penning was a guy from Northern Iowa who a lot of the year was, second round, maybe first, and now it's just like, top 15 pick. There wasn't so much as skill position players that I wanted to see. There was a cornerback, Roger McCreary, from Auburn, who kind of caught my eye. This every year I keep thinking about how the Senior Bowl always opens my eyes to different players who I wouldn't have been thinking about, who happen to fit things that I like in guys that I want on my favorite team, guys who play good technical ball, who don't make a lot of mistakes, don't make a lot of dumb penalties. Those are the types of players I love to target. And that's what the Senior Bowl brings to us. And I watch it every year with the intent of finding someone that hopefully ends up on the Bears.
Oh, for sure. And then it's like, it's funny how, I'm sure, Lou, you remember when we were like, you know, I don't mean to single you out, Jacob, but you are a fair bit younger than Luis and I. When the Senior Bowl first started getting aired on NFL Network years ago, the Senior Bowl was for guys who were like almost an afterthought in the draft process. Like, they would go down there to Mobile to almost get noticed and like show that they were worth drafting. Like, you know, it's funny when you see someone like Chancey Stuckey becoming a wide receivers coach at, I believe, Michigan right now. And I remember when he came out of college and, like, he was a solid college player, but he had to go to Mobile in order to, like, kind of get his draft stock up coming out of Clemson. You know, it's just funny how it works. And now, like, when you go down there, it's like the who's who of, like, who's going to get drafted at senior class. Now, it is, like, just – it's just a difference. But on that, a guy I really liked in terms of his film, and it's not sexy film because Jacob knows I love nose tackles. And it's it's something I can't shake. And a true nose is not going to fit in what Matt Eberflus does. It's why I think majority of our are in agreement when we say Eddie Goldman has probably had his last hurrah as a Bear. But that is Fedarian Mathis. And – he's just a load of a man. He's like he's a true nose. He doesn't really like have like the sack or the pass rush numbers, but he does anchor well. He pushes people around. He holds his gap. He makes his plays within what he's asked to do, and he anchors well. Like he does, he just sets and he pushes you around, for lack of a better term. Does he have a fit in Chicago? No, not really. But I just find him to be very joyful to watch. And it sounds like he did have a nice week down in Mobile.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think with Fedarian Mathis, the big thing with him is just the upside. I feel like he's a bit raw, I'd like to think. I think that from a technical perspective, from just the flexibility in his lower half, I think can improve a little bit. But he's quick. He's quick off the ball, and he's got a nice, like, raw power in his frame. And he's a big dude, too. So,
yeah, he's 6'4", roughly 315 pounds.
Yeah, yeah, like, that's damn good size for an NFL guy at the next level. So,
big man.
That's a big boy.
Yeah. Another guy I want to talk about, he's an edge rusher. So, I don't know about you guys. I don't really consider edge rushers to be defensive linemen. Whenever people talk about D linemen nowadays, I just think about interior dudes. Like that's just the way that my mind goes. So I guess kind of sort of related, but I think Jermaine Johnson out of Florida State had a killer weekend or in a killer week in general. I think that he just straight up dominated, honestly. And there are a handful of other guys too I can touch on, like Boye Mafe out of Minnesota was really good. I think that Mafe's athletic ability is insane, and I expect him to test very well at the combine. But I do want to talk about Jermaine Johnson, though, because he really broke out for Florida State this year. So you're looking at a guy who's like he's a solid athlete, but he wins with technique and just strength. Like he's a nasty dude who's able to push the pocket well. Got a nice arsenal of pass rushing moves to be able to penetrate the backfield. Another big guy, and he's not like a bad athlete by any means. So Jermaine Johnson, I think, definitely made himself some money. He's a guy that I think a lot of people were talking about as a second round guy, but now you're kind of looking at him and say, okay, he's probably going to go in the first round. It's just a matter of where.
Mm-hmm. I love guys like that, man. Guys that win with technique at a big college program, show out at the Senior Bowl. Those guys I love drafting and I love following them because once they get to the pros, a lot of them will get, you know, you get that pro workout regimen, you get that pro training, you get that pro, you know, meal plan. And then you really start to, that's when you really start to see some of their skills shine through. And it's just like, man, how come this guy wasn't on our radar before? And so often it's because, well, you know, when you're in college, you can get away with things when you're a superior athlete or you're not able to, you know, commit yourself because of other things that you got going on in school and in life. Love guys like that. That's the kind of guy that I'd love to, you know, keep track on as this draft process moves on.
So Jacob, you kind of touched on the defensive lineman from Minnesota. I wanted to jump to the other side because I was really excited to see how Daniel Falele was going to produce down there. And his tape is funny just because he's abnormally large. Like he's big even by like big people standards. It's unbelievable. He's like 6'9", like 380 pounds or something like that. Like, and it was kind of like last year, like, it was the reason I went back and watched Spencer Brown after his weigh in at the Senior Bowl. I was like, oh, that dude is huge out of Northern Iowa. And it was the same thing like with Flaley this year. When his measurements came out, I'm like, I got to go watch him again. And I turned him on. It was like, I don't know if he's great. And it sounded like he had a really up and down week when I was hoping he would really dominate, because I like that size, like, you should be able to, you know, kind of just impose your will on anyone. And he, in theory, should be a plug and play run blocker, just because, like, it's like, hey, dude, go forward, push people away. It's more the fact that Minnesota runs a super RPO heavy offense, and he wasn't asked to really do his 5 yard sets and stuff like that when it comes to pass setting. I was really hoping that he would show adeptness, just because he is so large. Like, he doesn't have to work outside in with a lot, like a lot of tackles do, because of his just frame. Yeah. He could almost work inside out in his pass sets, but I don't know. It seems like he's a project. I was hoping for more out of him, but it sounds like he got worked a couple times. It sounds like he won a couple times, but there wasn't ever just that moment where it like clicked for him. And it was like, I am better than these guys. Let me just do what I do. And yeah, that was just kind of a letdown for me, just because I really kind of liked the idea of him just based off of a sheer physical standpoint.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think that whoever drafts Daniel Falele knows that he's going to be a work in progress, because I feel like when you're a guy who's that tall, like, he struggles with getting low, and that can affect his just how much right. torque he's able to generate in his lower half. And it also affects his balance. And I feel like for someone who's as big as he is, he can get pushed around. I mean, I don't want to say he gets bullied out there, because you can't bully a guy who's 6'8", 6'9", and nearly 400 pounds. But maybe he doesn't get the most out of the physical tools that he has. But looking at that, I mean, you're still looking at a monster of a man who's just huge and can move really well for his size. Like, I think that if he doesn't make it to the NFL, there's a calling for him in the WWE as a future champion, I believe, just because of how much of a sheer – that's like a Vince McMahon project come to life, more or less. But regardless, I think that, yes, he's a bit raw. I think his football IQ can improve a little bit. It's just his general technique.
And it's just weird, because he's not like clunky in how he moves. He moves okay for a guy his size. Like, yeah. So it's like he just, it's like he needs refinement. And it's like when you start getting past like the second, third rounders, that's what every one of these guys is like, oh, he just needs this. He just needs that. Well, there's a reason they need these things. That's why they're, you know, falling.
Yeah, no. And I think with Falele, something to keep in mind is like, he only started playing football in 2017. Like, he started as a senior in high school at IMG, which, I mean, IMG is an incredible school. So, you know, that goes to show just the sheer athletic talent he has. But he's still, like, relatively new to the game compared to, like, you know, basically everyone who's coming into this draft. So,
right.
I think that there's going to be a bit of a learning curve there. If I wouldn't go first round with him just because of that. I think that I don't know for sure if he's the type of guy who can start all 17 games as a rookie, but there's something there. There are tools there, and I think someone's going to take a shot on him sometime on day two.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy who, like you said, he's got some things to work on. He's got some flaws, but he's a guy, because of his size and because of his pure ability, you could see him worked into lineups, worked into certain packages. Like, hey, like, go downhill, move some dudes, run behind this guy, and then build him up from there. Kind of like how we used to see it done with some guys. You know, we saw it done with James Daniels to an extent a couple of years ago when he was a rookie. You know, the Bears started with Eric Kush at the left guard spot. They rotated Daniels in, and then once he got his, you know, once he got his bearings, then they unleashed him. Falele is the kind of guy where I can see a smart team doing something similar. Get him in a goal line package, get him in some heavy sets, and then build up his confidence and build up his skills with game reps, but also through practice.
I guess, Lou, the question then becomes, if you're going to build him up, should we nickname him Buttercup? I'm sorry. I'll
stop. Boo!
That,
Boo!
Set myself up for that one.
Gee, I hate myself. All right. So before we move on to our next topic, let me give a small break to our ad guys here, and we'll be back in a second.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
And we're back. So we touched a bit on the Trench Warriors and guys that kind of caught our eye. Like I said, we're not going to go too deep on some of these guys because we'll have our draft positional breakdowns that Jacob and I will do, where we go probably 15 guys deep on just defensive tackle. And it's like, it becomes monotony. This is just supposed to be a warm-up and welcome back. Lou, I'll leave the floor to you. What was a player at another position that you really like? You can go wide receiver, linebacker, safety, corner. Floor is yours. Where do you want to go next?
So there was a guy that I was looking at over the weekend who kind of had fallen off my radar because of an injury, and it's John Metchie III from Alabama. I look at him, and I look at that injury, and I go multiple ways here. I see a potential luxury pick because drafting a receiver in the, you know, possibly in the second round in a receiver-heavy class who has a very fresh injury seems kind of risky, right? But I look at his tape, and I look at the highlights, and I look at the skill, and I think, man, if you can just get through that 1 year of rehabilitation and getting him, you know, accustomed to the NFL life, man, the payoff could be huge. And with the Bears not having a first-round pick, I am looking for players with big upside who can pay off in big ways. And that's the kind of guy who, you know, if he slips, it's the kind of guy that I'd love to target if I was the Bears. They could get receivers in a number of different ways this offseason, but Metchie is the one that, like, man, this guy probably was like a legit first round pick before he gets injured, and getting a first round caliber talent in round two, that's always the dream, right?
Right. Yeah, Metchie almost feels like the forgotten man of Alabama between last year and the years prior, with like Henry Ruggs and the Slim Reaper and all these guys that were just in this wide receiver room at Alabama. And it's like John Mechie's out here catching balls and putting up yards. And then he hurts his – I think he tore his knee up, right? Tore his ACL.
Tore his ACL in the SEC championship game.
And it's like – and then even he's still the second fiddle of your thought this year with Jameson on the team. It's like – what else does that guy have to do to get noticed? Like, Metchie is someone you, depending on how teams feel about him, you could even see him fall into the third round because of that knee at such a late portion of the year. And because he was almost, I don't want to say an afterthought, but he was never the dude in Tuscaloosa. You know, there's a lot that goes into it there. And it's like, it's why you see him, I'm sure, a lot of guys transferring out of Alabama every year because there's just no room for them to go play.
You know, and I think with Metchie that, no, I definitely agree that there's a lot to like in his skill set, and he probably is more or less the forgotten man with Jameson having his breakout year, with, you know, Metchie's injury and just how talented of a wide receiver class this is, which, you know, sucks for him because when I watched his tape, I feel like there's a legit argument to be made that he's the best pure route runner in this class.
Yes.
I think he's the type of guy I wouldn't say he's quite at the level of Devontae Smith coming out, but he's the closest thing that this class has, in my opinion, to a sheer route running technician, someone with a variety of releases off the snap, someone who can consistently get low and explode out of his breaks. And he's a good athlete for sure. Like, I think he's got, you know, above average agility and solid deep speed all told. But I think that what really makes him stand out is just how well he can get open. And the question with that is, okay, his knee's shredded now. Like, what's going to happen with that? Is he going to be able to separate consistently like he did at Alabama? And what exactly is his ceiling at the next level? Because I don't put a ton of stock into, okay, he wasn't wide receiver one, but, you know, it is something to consider when looking at these guys. Like, okay, if he can't be wide receiver one at his own school, could he be that at the NFL level? So, I mean, and that's happened before. It certainly happened. I want to say DK Metcalf's a good example because he wasn't the bona fide top guy at Ole Miss, if I'm not mistaken. But
no, that was AJ Brown, and still not quite the. He's much more the sexy fan guy, but yeah. AJ Brown has just been more productive to this point in their careers, and it's not really to any fault of either guy. You know, I would classify Seattle to this point. Last year was kind of a dumpster fire for them between the speculation with Russell Wilson, not Westbrook.
Never seen those two guys in the same place at the same time. Just saying.
That's true.
The Brody and football pads.
Yeah.
they both got drafted by Seattle. So
this is true. Just splits his time between Seattle and OKC or now LA.
Yeah, because Westbrook, he got drafted by the Supersonics, never played there because then they moved to Oklahoma City. But just saying, I think there's a conspiracy to look into here.
Right. So kind of following on your little coattails there, Lou, of receivers, there was a guy down in Mobile that I started watching when I saw the rosters kind of start trickling out of Nevada, Romeo Dobbs. I think it's Dobbs. And he catches my eye because he is he's not big. He's 6'2", 200 pounds, so he's bigger. But he's pure big play space. And he wins 50-50 balls. He's a downfield threat. And that's something that I think in terms of what the Bears are looking for, if we're looking at just this in a Bears-centric way, someone you could target in the middle of the draft and really be happy with what you come out with, because he's going to need probably a little time and not be relied upon in a major role, but he can be that spark plug where if you're running a lot of these play action shots downfield, like we think the Bears probably should do, given what Field showed to be his strengths and weaknesses this past year, he could be an ideal fit going forward, especially when you factor in, like I said, the ball skills, the 50-50 stuff, the big plays. And he just, like, he almost seems to win right now in with the Nevada team by just pure athleticism, just explosion and ability to get downfield in a hurry. I'm not sure what you guys think about him, but he's just someone that I've only watched maybe a game and a half on him, but I do really like what I've seen from him. And then it sounds like he performed pretty well down at the Senior Bowl as well.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that. So I looked it up while you were on your spiel. It's Romeo Dobbs.
Dobbs
is how
to football ball. Name.
That is a football
name. That is a football name. Yes.
And I've realized I've been saying Romeo Dobbs this entire time, and I never bothered.
I'm saying Dubes, so I'm dumb.
So. That's the kind of guy you want to see land in, like, Seattle or Denver with that name.
Don't do that to me.
Don't do this to me. Yeah. I mean, come on. You had one, Danny. You had your dad.
No, stop it. No, mine was better, though.
Fine. Okay. It's too early for this. Too early for this in the morning, but no. But yeah, so Romeo Dobbs, I think, is the type of guy that, again, there's a lot to like with him, and I think that a lot of it comes down to size and athleticism. He's the type of guy, put him along the boundary. I just love to see him it's simple. Just watch him run like go routes and more vertical route concepts like that, because he's got some good buildup speed. He's got some good burst off the snap. And, you know, like you mentioned, that physicality at the catch point, that contested catch ability, it's really impressive. So he's the type of guy I think would be a really good fit with Justin Fields' skill set. I don't want to jump entirely off of him, but there's another guy I think kind of fits that mold too. And that's another guy who was down in Mobile. That's Christian Watson on North Dakota State. And I think that
that is a, my co-host on the other show here on the Windy City Gridiron Podcast Network, Brandon Robinson, that's his guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's convinced that if you pass him, you're passing the wrong dude.
And North Dakota State puts out some dudes every year.
That's true. That's true. They've got
shouts out to Trey Lance.
They've got a good program over there, but that's in Fargo, right?
They do.
Yep.
Fargo.
Fargo, yeah. Because I remember I was up in North Dakota like 2 years ago, and I'm like, oh, maybe I'd be able to, you know, go out to Fargo. And I was in like the far west part of North Dakota, and I'm like, okay, I got to drive like 5 hours just to get to the school. I'm not going to be able to see it, but I don't know why I said that. That's just my story of North Dakota, the only one I know. But
I think you're one of like four people I know that has a North Dakota story. So
yeah, I'm in a high regard then, I guess. But yeah, no, I think that Christian Watson, he's the type of guy. He's 6'4", and he doesn't move like he's 6'4". And I think there's some technical stuff to work on with him as a route runner, but he just moves so well, and it's so much fun to watch. So I don't know. We'll see where he ends up. I feel like the consensus is a bit too low on him right now. I feel like people are saying more or less like round four, but I think that's going to rise. I have like an early round three on him. I know, you know, like B-Rob, he's even higher on him than I am as like a,
I've got a late three on him right now. So,
okay. So,
you know,
it's similar area more or less.
Yeah. So, late three, early four is where I think he would be. But I mean, like I said, it's all, I don't know how many times I can express this in so many words, but draft evaluation isn't science. It's art.
Yeah.
Like there's different ways of looking at it. Like, every prospect in a way is its own abstract painting. Like, what do you see? Well, I see this. What do you see? Well, I see that. Like, none of us really know. Like, and so much of it about it is the system they go to and where they end up and, you know, whatnot. But I do, you said, you know, you brought up him. I do want to ask both of you on a guy that seems to be becoming the bell of, like, specifically Bears Twitter ball for, like, wide receivers. And that's Calvin Austin III.
Hmm.
And everyone seems to love him. And, you know, we kind of similar in that same vein why I kind of brought up the art thing. I admit I have my biases against certain things. One of them is competition level. Like, if you don't, like, play great competition, I kind of knock you for it. Not that it's your fault, unless you're absolutely killing everybody you go up against. Like, and it's backfired on me in the past. I thought Josh Allen at Wyoming never really played up to competition when he played better teams. I thought he was very inaccurate. I thought he had a lot of question marks and he was more just a ball of physical skills versus something that you really could hang your hat on in terms of this is what he does well.
Well, hold on. And you weren't wrong. Don't beat yourself up because Josh Allen, the pro, is far better than Josh Allen, the college, because the college guy, like, that's who he was. He was inaccurate. He was an athlete playing quarterback. And that's the thing about some of these prospects that we're going to talk about starting now and through the end of the draft process is these guys are going to grow. The best ones will grow. Mm-hmm. So you have to find those guys, who you know do things well. Like, I love the wide receiver conversation we just had with, like, well, I know this guy, he can do this, this, and this. And this guy can do this and this and has this size. Like, they're obvious, like you said, it's an abstract painting. But it's just like, all right, can I hang this in my house? Is this going to be a good conversation piece?
Can I hang this in my house?
So,
yeah,
that's what I'm looking for in prospects.
Right. So, but then I see Calvin Austin. And I like Calvin. I think he's quickly becoming someone I think similar to how I felt about Jalen Darden in last year's process where he's becoming the belle of the ball. And it's like, he's 5'7". and it's not like it's the only reason to like knock him. Like he's tiny. He doesn't win 50-50 balls really all that well. And he has no ability to really break a tackle. Like, unless he's making you miss, he's not going to go through you and make an extra play kind of thing. Like, good player. I'd probably take him in the high part of day three. I don't really want to touch him any higher than that, but I just feel like right now, especially with what I'm seeing all over, like, you know, it's where you try to not get deterred into like changing your opinion on someone because you start seeing everyone else's love for him. And it's like, I don't hate the guy at all, but I just see him in a different light. And it has nothing to do with Anthony Miller also being from Nevada, or not Nevada. That's Romeo Dubs. It's more just Anthony Miller being from Memphis. It, like, I scout players, not schools, kind of thing. And
all that. No, my Austin thing has partly to do with Miller. And like, that's no knock on Calvin Austin. It's just that once you get burned by a guy, it can be a pain, and it can be hard to break that mold. And like, I see what you're saying. Like, he's got some skill. You can see where maybe this works at the next level, but there are some, I don't want to say red flags, there's some yellow flags, which is like, you don't want to fall too far for a guy, because then you're good. That's when you miss out on players who you should be keeping eyes on.
So the way – that's a good way of putting it. And then so remember when the Rams last year took Tutu Atwell?
Yeah.
So Tutu was a guy I really liked just on pure tape. I thought he was skinny. I didn't think he was as light as he actually weighed in. When he weighed in, I was like, I think I had Tutu as a round two, late two, early three last year. And then he weighed in and I knocked him down to like the fifth. I'm like, nope, I can't have a dude who's 150 pounds playing football at the NFL level. Like, he's got to get bigger. And I'm not saying it's a one-to-one comparison. They're different players. But I'm just saying that I kind of hold guys up to the same metrics here and there. It's like, oh, if I ding you for this, I'm going to ding you for that. It's everyone gets the same, you know, reasoning for my knocks.
Got to be consistent.
Right, exactly. Now, see, where I do think you could make up the value in Austin if you pick him up, especially if the Bears do let someone like the Texas Tech returner. Oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank on his name. They traded for a midseason with the sixth rounder. Went to the Pro Bowl.
Jakeem Grant Sr.
Jakeem Grant. So if you let Jakeem Grant walk, Calvin Austin has return ability. And we saw the Bears take a return specialist in the second round who was just up for Canton this year. Now, I'm not saying he's Devin Hester, but I'm saying that adds to value. If you are a kick-ass return guy, that's just more value into what you bring.
And that's where I like guys like that. So, like, on the one hand, I have my concerns, I have my issues, but on the other hand, I love guys who can do multiple things. And especially through a Bears lens, this is a team that has a bunch of free agents and a bunch of roster spots. And while it has a good amount of cap space, it's not going to be able to fill all its needs. It's a team that's not filling all its needs in one offseason. So, like, what should you be looking for? I think you should be looking for, and really this is just general draft, NFL draft thought, is like,
salute to general NFL draft.
You got to find guys who can play multiple roles when you can. A guy that can play wide receiver and return some kicks and take some handoffs and play some special teams. That's why I like Jakeem Grant. That's why I liked Cordarrelle Patterson when he was with the Bears. Like, yeah, he's a great, you know, kick return specialist, but the guy was on coverage teams. The guy was taking handoffs. The guy can line up at receiver. When you have as many holes as the Bears do, you really need to find guys who can fill multiple holes with just one roster spot. I think of it the way that, in baseball terms, the way Joe Maddon used to manage the Cubs. It was just like, yeah, like 2015, Javi Baez was a great, you know, up-and-coming player, but like, he played second. He played him at short. He played him at third. Chris Bryant was a great third baseman. Played him in left. Played him in right. Played him all over the diamond. In a football sense, you have to find those guys who can, yeah, I can line them up at receiver. I can line them up in the backfield. He can run a pattern out of the backfield. He can contribute on special teams. Those kinds of dudes you need to build a good football team.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Jacob, while you stepped away for a second, Lou and I were talking about the guy that's become the bell of the Bears ball, as it were, that I, as I phrased him, is Calvin Austin III. Lou and I seem to kind of be on the same page as a lot of people. Were like, we're a little lower on him than it seems like a lot of the other draft community is. Like, not that we think he's bad or he's anything like that, but it's like, it's hard to overcome 5'7" in the NFL level. And if you remember, I gave Lou the example where last year I had a late second or whatever it was on Tutu Atwell, and the second he weighed in at like 150 pounds or whatever it was, I knocked him down to the fourth, because you just can't be that small. Now, does it mean he can't play? No, it does not mean that. It's more just football is a violent game played by really large men.
Yeah.
And that a guy like that needs to almost be used in a smaller capacity, where you're using him almost like I hate the term gadget term player, because it's such a like a backhanded compliment, but I don't mean it that way. Yeah. I mean it like you can line him up outside, you can line him up inside, you can have him return kicks and punch, you can have him even probably take a handoff or two just to get him the ball, because he is lightning in a bottle. But I just don't know if that's a reliable guy that you want to take like in the third round with that pick, you know?
Yeah, no. So my thing with Calvin Austin is I'm a little bit torn, because I've seen people projecting him as high as round two, which I'm not sure I agree with. I have like that late three, early four on him right now. I mean, and that's still a work in progress, obviously. That, like, when I mention these grades, I mean, I'm sure it's the same for you guys, but I still have more to watch of a lot of these dudes. Like, you know, and I'll be doing that over the course of these next few months here. But that size, it's going to be tough to overcome. I really think that. And for someone who's as small as he is, I think that he doesn't necessarily – he's not a bad route runner, but I don't think he's as technically sound as arguably he should be. And he wins a lot with speed. I mean, and he's really fast. You know, he's got that going for him. He's, you know, one of the fastest guys in this class, in my opinion. And he's the type of guy, you get him the ball in space, you scheme ways for him to – you know, be able to make some moves, and he could break away for some big games, but I don't know how big of a role he's going to have early on in his career. I think that he's someone that, okay, you can give him a couple touches, maybe like two or three catches a game, and then like a designed run or something like that, which, you know, that's not like a wide receiver one necessarily, but that is, you know, it's something. So I don't know exactly where he'll end up, because again, that size is concerning, and he's, for the most part, I feel pretty one-dimensional. He has a good speed release, but again, being that small, it's tough. It's tougher to, you know, break free from press and to be able to combat like hand usage through your stems like that as a route runner. But he's fun to watch. I will say that he's a lot of fun to watch. I don't know where he ends up at the pro level. I don't know how well he plays, but I know that someone who's that fast, I think someone's going to take a shot on him at some point relatively early. I don't want to say like within the first two rounds, I don't think, but I think that there's with that speed, someone's going to be interested for sure.
So I always wonder about, go ahead, Luke, go ahead.
I was saying, I always wonder about guys like him who, when they make the jump to the next level, they're going to be at a reduced load compared to what they were in college. And I always wonder how they adjust.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know how he adjusts to being a guy. Cause we see it a lot when a guy does that jump, gets a reduced role, gets a couple steps, tries to do too much, complicates things, ends up in a doghouse, and that snowballs in a negative way. That's a concern that I have. And I think it's a fair concern.
For sure. I tend to agree with you right there, Lou. So before we move past the wide receivers, just because we have gotten a little long on them, I have to bring one up just because of his local connection to the Chicago area. And that is from, I guess, what you would call the Cinderella team of this year, who made it to the college football playoff and everything with the Cincinnati Bearcats. And that's Alec Pierce. I have an affinity for him, mainly because he isn't like, for lack of a better term, a white slot guy. I think he's really interesting because he's this big, physical, fast wide receiver. And I want to say was the number one for that Bearcat team.
He was.
And I find him really interesting because I know he hasn't tested yet, but at least on tape, that dude will go. And
physical player, yes.
Yeah, it just he's big, he's strong, he's fast, and it's like he reportedly runs a mid 4.4s. Like we'll see again when that time comes, but like I think like specifically where when I've watched a couple games of him that I have, specifically more when I was watching Desmond Ridder this year, because breaking Desmond Ridder is still Desmond Ridder. If you try to man press Alec Pierce, he is going to torture you.
Yeah.
He's too big. He's too strong. Yeah. I feel like Stacey King right now. Too big, too strong, too fast. Like, and I just really enjoyed watching him. I don't know where to put him. Like, do I put him in the second round? Do I put him in the third round? I really like what he brings to the table, and it's cool, like, especially when you start reading about him after you start watching tape, because, you know, you start doing a small dive on their personal background. He's from Glen Ellyn. Like, he went to Glenbard West. He's a local kid. So it's like, it'd be kind of a cool story if he were to end up back in Chicago. And again, the big play threat, he would fit a need that this offense would have, and something that I personally would like the Bears to do, especially after watching the games and the film this year of the Bears, those wide receivers were not physical. They were getting pushed around. Pierce, you're not going to push him around. And I think they need some, especially if you're going to do a lot of the Shanahan style offenses, you need receivers that are going to be willing to buckle their chin strap and go put a block on someone. And it's been a while since the Bears have really had one of those guys. Like Darnell Mooney tries, but it's just a physical component that he physically can't do.
Yeah.
Pierce, I'm sure, will do it just fine. I just want to know if you guys have watched him at all and where you kind of see Alec Pierce before we move on.
Pierce, funny enough, came up as a Bears projected second round pick in the post Super Bowl Bleacher Report scouting department draft. So
look at that.
Put him on my radar. Yeah, and then I saw some of the same stuff in brief that you saw. Bigger guy, physical, you know, willingness to kind of get his nose dirty. I had brought him up in conversation with a friend, and I don't want to get killed for this, but I might. Watching the brief stuff that I did reminded me of watching Antonio Brown, Dan Lefevre. It was at Central Michigan when they were in school.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people were super big on Lefevre as a prospect, and I'm just like, you know, this Antonio Brown guy is making some awesome plays on the ball. And like that's how I felt watching Pierce.
That is like, Mr. Big Chest to you, sir.
My apologies.
Also, I feel like I should mention in the corner here, I got my Bennett Academy flag. Dan Lefevre, a famous alumnus of Bennett Academy.
Oh.
And I, one in the same.
Look at that. But does he have a monument next to Frank Kaminsky's monument, though?
His number is retired. I know he's got a banner.
Nice. It's
him, Frank Kaminsky, and there's one other guy. I don't remember who it is. But I know for a fact that those two numbers are retired. And I don't know. That's just a little fun anecdote. But, yeah, no, sorry to cut you off, Luis. But, yeah, I just thought I'd bring that up because not very often that you get the chance to talk about Dan Lefevre.
Don't you love the draft? It brings out some names.
Oh, my God, does it bring out some names. That is that's a thing, right? Dan Lefevre. So fun quick story about Dan Lefevre. If you had the last NCAA football game, he was on that Central Michigan team with Antonio Brown. He was broken in that game. He was essentially Tim Tebow on steroids because he was faster.
Yeah. I never did play as that Central Michigan team, but I'm kind of regretting it now, honestly. I'd always, I play a lot as Florida. I'd play with Tebow all the time, obviously. I like playing with Blaine Gabbert, Mizzou, down the line, which this sounds weird saying now that we know who Blaine Gabbert became in the NFL, but Blaine Gabbert was cracked out in that game. It was unbelievable. But I'll give my quick little Alec Pierce spiel here to get back on topic. And going back to his high school days, like at Glenbard West, he played – I have it down here because whenever I take my notes, I look through their like player bios on the website and stuff to see like how many
years their athletic histories and stuff like
that. Yeah, their athletic history. And Alec Pierce played football, volleyball, basketball, and track in high school. So that is an athlete right there. And again, he's a big dude, like 6'3", really physical at the catch point, great hands, great deep speed. I have down here deceptive agility after the catch. And I swear
he's a white wide receiver. I got it.
I swear that's not because he's a white guy. I swear that this, okay. All right. So
because he's a bigger white guy.
Exactly.
He's a bigger white guy.
Because he's a bigger white guy. If it, I did that for size, which normally doesn't happen. Normally, if it's deceptively quick, then, you know, it kind of fits under that, that stereotype, if you will. But no, I think Alec Pierce, for someone who's as big as he is, he can move around really well. So is he raw? Absolutely. I don't think he's a great route runner at this stage. And he had a season-ending injury, not this year, but the past year. So, you know, there's a little bit of room for concern. But I think that if you're looking for a developmental tool type of guy, then Alec Pierce is the way to go for sure. Because with that size, speed, and physicality, I mean, it's tough to find a guy in this class who can match that.
I do like he's shown an ability to come back from injury and be productive. That's always a good sign to me.
Like I said, one of the things I always put stock in for receivers is, are you willing to mix it up in the run game? Are you still going the full throttle if the play isn't designed to be thrown your way? Like, that was something I noticed, for instance, going back to a couple years ago with the Senior Bowl. Denzel Mims, if you turned his tape on, if the ball wasn't projected to come with him, he quit on the play. It's just something he did. And that bugs me. If you're not willing to sell it, put your nose in it, do certain things, those are all like just things. It's like ding, ding, ding. Nope, I'm done. So Pierce, kind of like for the small stuff that I really enjoy, Pierce does a lot of that where he is willing to do that. So moving on from receivers, let's move on to everyone's favorite position, because you can't do an NFL draft show without it. I'm going to get my pitch. I'm sure people are going to get their pitchforks and their torches ready for me. There is not a single first-round quarterback in this class, and you can't convince me otherwise.
You're not alone in saying that.
No, I know that. And when I saw from The Athletic, the guy who does the Beast every year, whose name is
Dane Brugler.
Dane Brugler. One of the best in the business there is. He doesn't have a single quarterback inside his top 30. You know what? That is vindication. That's what that is, my friends. And is it to say I dislike these quarterbacks? No, it does not. It means if you're going to take one of these guys top 15, you better be damn well certain. Like, I can't really bring myself to put guys like Kenny Pickett as the first quarterback in the draft, just because he leaves so much to be desired. Like, cool, he played for Pitt. Neat. He was good.
Dan Marino.
Yeah.
It's like so did Tyler Pelko. Tyler Pelko played for Pitt.
Joe Flacco was going to play for Pitt, and then Dave Watson showed up. He's like, I'd rather go play in Delaware.
So, again, Kenny Pickett, probably like my QB 3 or 4. I don't have my quarterback rankings in front of me just because I really don't care about this position this year. There's good players. There's players that you really need a scheme fit for. Versus like guys like Lawrence, Fields, Wilson, Mac Jones, they're all kind of like you can build your offense around them. Versus you need a more tailored kind of offense for these guys, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So if I had to give you if you want the highest swing, I don't even think he's QB1 in my rankings. I think he's probably QB2, but the biggest swing's Malik Willis, and he, I guess, balled out after the first day down there. But I have questions about him because, again, another one of my small things that I don't like is old players that are old when you draft them. Malik Willis is going to be 23 before he ever plays an NFL snap. Like, that means when you're signing him to his extension, he's 28, 29 years old. Like, that worries me.
Yeah, there are concerns about this quarterback class. And, like, so I'm trying not to be broken by 2017, but I remember early in the 2017 process that, like, there were people who were saying that, you know, there's not a first-round quarterback in this class. Like, I remember mock drafts having Deshaun Watson going in the second round. I remember an ESPN ranking that had Nathan Peterman ahead of Patrick Mahomes. I don't think there's a quarterback in this class who is going to see their stock skyrocket the way that Mahomes and people eventually came around to Watson. Just my concern, if I was looking for a quarterback, is how soon can I play them? Because it's the most important position on the field. If I'm going to draft a quarterback who needs time, that means I also have to hit in free agency. It's asking for a lot. And I'm glad the Bears don't have to do that this year.
Yeah. So
that is for sure.
Yeah, and I'll just pitch in here because I do want to talk a little bit about Malik Willis. So, full disclosure, he's my QB1 right now. And do I think that he's the most polished guy in this class? No. Do I think he's the best decision maker in this class? No. And I do have two QBs in my top 30 as it stands right now, but only one of them's in my top 20. So, generally, I'm not as low maybe on that class, but in terms of a pure first round grade, I don't know if there's going to be a guy who carries that on my board. So, but the reason I have Malik Willis at QB1 is I want to put it this way. I have similar grades with him and Kenny Pickett. Those are my top two quarterbacks in this class right now. And the thing that makes Malik Willis stand out to me is if he doesn't improve his decision-making, he's still an elite athlete at quarterback who teams will have to account for in some way. And if he does hit, then he's a dual threat maniac. And I think that, yes, his decision-making with the ball isn't great. He can do a better job of, one, ball security and just generally not forcing throws. And he trusts his arm a little bit too much, but you're still looking at a guy with solid natural timing in his throws, a guy with a cannon of an arm, and someone who's one of the best athletes at quarterback that we've seen in recent years. And that's saying a lot. Like, I mean, from Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray to potentially a Justin Fields or something like that, you know, the Trey Lance, those kinds of athletes, Malik Willis is up there. I think he enters the NFL as a top three pure athlete at the quarterback position. And I think that's what separates him for me. And even with all those concerns, even with like, okay, he's a bit undersized. He's, you know, 6 foot flat and maybe he's still a work in progress. Not maybe he is. He definitely is. But I think for those reasons alone, you're looking at Willis as a potential game breaker. So again, I'm not super high on this QB class, but if there's anyone I'm taking a swing on, it's probably going to be Malik Willis.
Give me the guy with the loud tools.
Yep, pretty much. And that's why I have Matt Corral at that same thing. Tools. It's just that's the guy. Like, tools, you want tools, you want fun.
Yeah.
Corral is fun. Corral is chaos is what he is. It's like, Jesus, dude, what are you doing? But it is what it is. So I guess we'll each touch on one more player and then we'll wrap it up here before we get out. Let's do one more word from our sponsors and then we'll get out of here.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And we're back. So we all know the Bears are transitioning back to the more comfy feeling cover two base, if that's what you want to call it, defense. And that leads me to the Bears don't have a Mike. Not in my opinion, at least. I think Roquan Smith is probably the Lance Briggs or whatever you want to call him of this defense under Matt Eberflus. He's going to be on the field all the time. I don't want people to take that out of context with the amount of nickel and dime they're going to be playing. But down there was a man who plays like his hair is set on fire, and that is Mr. Chad Muma. Mm. And I think Chad Muma would be a – I know Adam Hoge had him as the 39th pick for them in his first rendition of a mock draft that he puts out every year leading up to the draft. I don't know if I'd take him that high, but he definitely is a fit as a more pure Mike backer in this system. And I really like how he plays. He's very instinctual. He's there to hit you. He's filling his gaps. He's running around. He's doing everything that you want a linebacker to do, which is really just clean up what the defensive line opens up for you. Just funnel things hit to him and Roquan and make your hits, make your plays. I don't think he's anything sexy because, you know, unless you're an edge getting a lot of sacks or you're just the most ridiculously looking fluid athlete at the Mike position, you're never going to be that sexy of a player. You're kind of just there to clean up the dirty work. Yeah, what do you guys think on him?
I like Chad Muma a lot. And again, I don't know if I'd go second round with him, but if he falls in the third round, I'm definitely jumping on that. And I know that a lot of, you know, I don't want to say a lot, but maybe some Bears fans aren't totally sold on a linebacker being an early round pick just because, oh, they need help at receiver, cornerback, offensive line. Those are generally the three consensus big needs. And I agree with that for sure. But if a value comes along at linebacker, if a value comes along at defensive tackle, I mean, we'll see what happens with Bilal and Akeem Hicks and what they do at that position. But there are a lot of different directions they can go in. And I think there are a few more directions than people tend to consider. So again, I think Muma, for how big he is, he's like 240, but he can move very well.
Yeah, he moves pretty well.
Yeah, and he's physical. He's able to shed blocks pretty well, which, you know, as linebackers seem to be getting smaller and smaller, that's a little bit of an issue for some guys, but that's not the case for Muma. And I think that there are some things to clean up with him. I think that as a tackler, he's decent. I don't want to say he's an elite tackler necessarily. And I feel like his angles are, again, not bad, but can improve a little bit. And then there's the whole playing level situation. Like, is he going to be able to adjust to a faster, more physical NFL? But I do like Chad Muma. I think that there's a lot of tools with him. And, you know, like we've been saying a lot throughout this show, tools are good. And if you get a guy like Muma, especially in round three, in my opinion, that's a guy you got to consider.
Yeah, man. Don't tell me about what you think a guy can't do. Tell me what he can do. And I think Muma's the kind of guy who you kind of know what he can be based on what he does well. And man, I go back and forth between thinking I'd be apoplectic if they drafted a second round linebacker, but like, just this profile is the type of linebacker is just like, oh, well, yeah, the Bears made a good choice here. So yeah, I've seen Muma in rounds 2, 3, and 4 in mock drafts. It's the kind of draft class with those kinds of players. It's like, man, I wish the Bears had more picks. This would be a great year to have just a high volume of picks. Hopefully, you know, just me. My ideal situation is someone falls in love with someone at 39 who the Bears aren't in love with, and the Bears can just, like, stock up some picks, move back.
For sure. Like, it's a very unfortunate situation the Bears are in going into this offseason. For all intents and purposes, they have almost no players under contract, which that $35 million cap number you keep seeing getting floated around is really kind of like the game portal, the cake is a lie. You know, it's not that number isn't real. Like, once you start factoring in everyone that needs to be signed, new money that might be needing to be given out, whether they bring back Bilal Nichols or someone like James Daniels, and they only have 5 picks. Like, they're not really in a super great position to just pick a luxury. You know, they got to pick things they actually need, which is my personal opinion. Like, you got to go, if you're going to do the free agency thing, you're going to go heavy free agency for offense.
Yeah.
And you're going to do more your defensive, hey, Matt, coach and coach these dudes up on defense.
That's the path.
That's to me, at least. Am I saying I'm right? No, but it feels like the most logical way to approach this, unless you're going to rip down the team and start trading your assets off. And I don't think Ryan Poles is going to do that.
And at that point, you're wasting Justin Fields' rookie contract,
which is the biggest market inefficiency in football. A young, cheap quarterback that hasn't been extended yet. All right. Any other players you guys want to touch on before we get out of here? One guy or another?
I have another that I do want to touch on. Because when you went down that linebacker rabbit hole talking about Muma, there's one other guy that popped into my head. And I don't know.
Is he from Oklahoma?
How did you know?
Because I had him highlighted on my spreadsheet.
Yeah. Again, and so Brian Asamoah is the guy we're talking about here. And
yeah, there it is.
I don't – so here's the thing. He played a lot of Mike at Oklahoma. I don't know if he's a Mike at the next level. I think you could slot him in as – project him as a Will. I think that's definitely possible, but I wouldn't rule out putting him as a Mike. And even though he's smaller, he's 6 foot flat, 222 pounds, but he's got really long arms. Like, I don't have it off the top of my head, or, you know, I don't have it up right now, but if I'm not mistaken, he has the longest wingspan of any linebacker who is down in Mobile. And he's someone who's only 6 feet tall. So you've got some dangly arms right there.
Dangly.
I don't know if that's the best adjective. I was trying to think of a way to describe it that wasn't concerning or not safe for work, but I
you could have said gangly.
I could have. That probably would have been better in the grand scheme of things, but I've dug myself a hole, so now I'm stuck in it. But with Asamoah, I think that you're looking at a guy who's very athletic. He's obviously smaller, but he moves well. He's got very good straight line speed. He's fluid moving around in space. Good in coverage too. And I think play strength is a bit of an issue for him, but he's smart, he's fast, and he plays hard. And I think that that's huge for anyone in need of a linebacker. So I don't know how high he goes, because it seems like the consensus is all over the place with him. Some people have him like round two, round three. Others have him all the way down in round five. I have honestly no idea where he goes. I'm in that round three, round four range for him right now, but there's a lot to like with him for sure. And if you're looking for speed, just explosiveness, athleticism at linebacker position, Asamoah is one of the best guys you can get in this class. So I'm interested in seeing how he tests, because I think he could put together a really good athletic profile at the combine.
Correct. So you said that, and I just was scrolling through, and I know he kind of had a great week down in Mobile, but I want to bring up just because he is a Boston College grad, Brian Poles, and Zion Johnson had a hell of a week down there, and his tape plays too. And I'm curious, just want to pose the hypothetical, because he's got interior versatility where he can play center or guard. It doesn't seem like Cody Whitehair is going to be here past this season unless he drastically changes the trajectory that he's on. And I'm not sure if James Daniels is going to be brought back at probably the tune of $9 or $10 million a year, as much as I would like him back, because I think he's a good player. But they have to pick and choose where their money goes. And I'm curious, just on this hypothetical, if Zion Johnson makes it to 39, do you trade back or do you run to the podium?
Man, it depends on what they do in free agency. If
that's
the glaring need, And that's the best player available. I'm super into him. He's a guy who caught my eye in Mobile and then watching and reading. I'd run to the podium and take him and figure out, like, immediately. Don't do the white hair Daniels thing and flip and flop and got him this year at this position and that position next year. Figure it out. Like literally go into that draft room with, hey, if this guy is available and we can draft him, this is going to be his role. That is what I would like to see.
You don't want the Ryan Pace special of everyone's flip-flopping offensive line positions every offseason? You don't want
that? I love versatility, and I love that potential. If necessary, I love that Cody Whitehair can play three different spots on the line. I just don't want him playing them all three in, like, three different years.
For sure. All right. Is that about all we got today, guys? Or is there one?
I have a project for you guys.
Uh-oh.
What's that?
I need you guys to find me this year's T. Higgins. I need the receiver who everyone's like, man, shouldn't that guy have been a first-round pick? And he falls into the second round right into the Bears' laps. That's who I'm looking for this year.
Alec Pierce, sir. We found him. Go away.
That's an answer. Love it.
No, you know what? That's a good question, especially because looking back on T's testing, T did not test well. He's this, like, long, slow, spindly, gangly wide receiver. Like, he kind of looks weird, but he's productive and he wins. And it's like that guy is hard to find because it's almost like players like him are exceptions, not rules, almost. And I liked T coming out, and then I saw his testing, and because, you know, I'm a human, and I see, oh, he ran a 4.6, can't do that, like, not fully realizing that how many times are these guys running 40 yards in a straight line during the course of a game.
Yeah. No, that's all true. Right. And I think that with Higgins, obviously the build-up speed was a bit of a concern, but he's showing that, you know, his size, his hands, his technical abilities as a route runner, even if he's not the most explosive guy, he's still able to create separation. So, you know what that means? I have gone an entire episode without mentioning the wide receiver that I believe fits that mold to a T, David Bell. I'm done.
Oh, my God. Stop that.
I'm not talking David Bell anymore. I just that's my obligatory David Bell.
I just had to plug him. There he is, David Bell. Hello, how are you? All right, cool. Well, gents, Luis, thank you for joining us. I look forward to reading what you got coming out on Bleacher Nation Bears. Jacob, till next time. And I just want to leave this with you guys as we wrap this show up. Today is 2/22/22 on a Tuesday. So, happy Tuesday. Yeah. Screw you. I can't get the pity laughs. You guys suck.
Come on. I'm going to be real. I thought you were going to be making a Glenn Lerner reference. That's what I was thinking.
I thought you were going to go with a Rick Ross reference.
I was leaning Rick Ross at some point, but I just kind of just stayed the course of it's 2-2. God, if you're from the Chicago area and you hear me say that jingle, I'm sorry, but that will forever haunt me.
He's got a Vegas office, and I was gone in Vegas when, and I saw the commercial. I'm like, no, you're in Chicago.
All right, guys, enjoy your Tuesday. Because of the immense amount of twos on said Tuesday, it is mandatory that you eat tacos. So go get yourself some birria or something like that, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. We're going to get out of here. Luis, hopefully we can have you on one more time before the draft comes.
I'll be looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right,
take care, guys. Enjoy your day.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see you guys.
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.